the orientation of the calendar this year affords us an opportunity to experience exactly as the Jewish people did in Egypt, the process of Yitzias Mitzrayim. As the Seder Olam tells us, but as we can also figure out based on careful attention to indications in the Chumash itself, the Jewish people left Egypt on the 15th of Nisan in that fateful year, which was a Yom Chamishi B'Shabbos, the Thursday of that week, meaning by definition that the 10th of that month, Be'asor L'Chodesh Hazeh, V'Kchulaham Ish Salavei Savo Salabayis, took place on Shabbos. That is to say, we're now already, by halachic standards, already in the 11th, Motzai Shabbos, but Shabbos HaGadol this year follows exactly the alignment of the original Shabbos HaGadol, the day that in Pesach Mitzrayim, that one year, we had the special additional commandment, what I just alluded to, V'kulahem Mekho Miba'asor. And it's really that process, what that represents, that I'd like to try to direct our attention to this evening in preparation for Pesach Tavshin Pei Gimel. The entire institution of Mekho Mibe'asor, of Kichas Haseh, is itself a very surprising one. For example, in Pesach Doros, the way the Karban Pesach was observed from that point forward, the next year in the Midbar, and then subsequently in the land of Israel, in all subsequent iterations, there was no din of Kicha Mibe'asor. There was no requirement to take the Seh on the 10th day of the month. One could take it in advance of whenever one would prepare to operate and to execute the mitzvah of Shchitas Karban Pesach, which is always from Chatzos on Yadalad V'shachtu Oso Kol Kahal Adas Yisrael Bein Harbaim. In that sense, this process of Kicha Mibe'asor, which happened literally today, the anniversary of that original date, itself requires understanding and analysis. Moreover, if we look at the second time the Torah references this, this is Shmos Perek Yud Beis, Pasuk Chaf Aleph, Vayomer Moshe Ziknei Yisrael, we have a slight emendation of the formulation, not Kichu Lachem Tzon, but a preceding, seemingly preliminary term, Mishchu U'Kichu Lachem Tzon. What is this additional term of Mishicha? What is its significance? How does it contribute to the overall framework that we wish to understand? If you look in Siman Taflamid and Orechayim, where the Torah discusses the origins of Shabbos HaGadol, the Beis Yosef presents what appears to be something, I wouldn't use, God forbid, the term pedantic, but it seems to be, on its face, a quibble. And yet, to my mind, it's actually the linchpin for all of our efforts this evening. The Beis Yosef wonders, if the Torah is correct, that Shabbos HaGadol is referred to as such because of the very idea that we're discussing, because we took this Seh that day, and I'll elaborate on what made that, you know, therefore, HaGadol so remarkable. Because I really don't understand why we would refer to it as Shabbos HaGadol. After all of the intervening days, the 10th, the 11th, the 12th, the 13th, the 14th, the 96 hours or thereabouts that would transpire between Kichas Haseh and Shchitas Haseh are all really of equal stature. There's nothing altogether significant about the beginning. And then the Beis Yosef kind of doubles back and he says, well, the beginning is always significant, but you have the very distinct impression, and I don't think I'm exaggerating at all, that from the Beis Yosef standpoint, had it happened on Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, it would have made no difference What he's arguing is that the beginning was significant. The moment that the Jews took what was Elohei Mitzrayim, an Egyptian deity, and as the Medrash elaborates, tied it to their beds, the Egyptians came in. What in the world is going on here? And the Jews said, you know, we're going to slaughter this later on this week. From that moment, the Medrash says, Parcha Nishmasa Mehem, they lost their minds. Or the Torah quotes it in slightly different fashion. V'hayu Shineim Chaos, they would grind their teeth. They became, you know, incensed and infuriated, but they were also impotent to do anything about it. One doesn't sense any kind of distinctive appreciation, you know, for Shabbos. We refer to it as Shabbos HaGadol. It was just that it happened on Shabbos. But in truth, it could have been any day, and there was no qualitative difference between it happening on Shabbos or happening Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, at any point. I would sharpen the question a little bit, which is, according to the Beis Yosef, it's a little bit hard to understand the nature of this process. It's one thing to say that the Jews had to take it in advance, make a stand, show the Egyptians that they weren't going to be subservient or afraid anymore, but one doesn't have any kind of distinctive reason that that process should take 24 hours, 48 hours, 72 hours, 96 hours, 120 hours, 144 hours, a full week, 168 hours. There's no rhyme or reason. The idea would simply be take in advance, show the Egyptians that their Avodah Zarah is no longer binding for you, that you're going to break free of that. It's really unclear, you know, why we should need this process of Dalet Yamim altogether. And so I think that question should also be considered as we try to proceed this evening. Allow me just to take a few steps back, and then hopefully we'll be able to proceed together. The Rambam and those, you know, who learn with me regularly know how much weight and import I assign this source. The Rambam did something very fascinating in the Yad HaChazaka, where he took what is a real gap in the Torah's presentation of the life of Avraham Avinu and elaborated on it in a very significant way. There's a Gemara in Masechta Nedarim, but the Gemara tells us that Avram struggled, not in the negative sense of that term, but in the literal sense of that term, to come to grips with the reality of creation and the Creator. So machlokas between Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan, how old was Avraham exactly when he arrived at this recognition? Our version of the Gemara says the dispute is he was 3 or he was 48. The Rambam's version of the Gemara evidently had the ages of 3 and 40. But what's significant for the Rambam is that both are correct. And the Rambam in Hilchos Avodah Zarah Perek Aleph speaks about a world in free fall. The Rambam uses the language of Haya Olam Nisgalgil, literally careening as if into the spiritual abyss, where the very recognition that there was a creator in any sense was at best the province of a few individuals, until the arrival, until the birth of the man who the Rambam refers to as Amudo Shel Olam, Avraham Avinu, the individual who gave ballast and stability to the world. It was a remarkable person that arrived on the scene. And the Rambam then inimitably describes the early history of Avraham Avinu, again, an aggregation of various midrashim and the like. Kevan Shenigmali Tanza, the Rambam writes, once he was 3 years old, thereabouts, Hitchil Lishote Bedato, Avraham Avinu began to consider at this, you know, very precocious age, how exactly the world could exist without a creator. And the Rambam elaborates from there, and he notes pointedly, Lo haya lo melamed v'lo modia davar, that Avraham Avinu was all alone, that nobody was there to guide him in this spiritual odyssey. But Avram indefatigably pursued what the Rambam calls Kav HaTzedek, the righteous approach, Ad Shehisig Es HaEmes Mitvunaso HaNechona, until he was able to arrive at the truth. Uben Arvayim Shana Hiker Avram Esbaro, 37 years of his life, Avram devoted to this. Didn't happen overnight. It didn't happen in a week, and it didn't happen in a month, or a year, or a decade. 37 years he invested in this process. And then the Rambam describes Avram's years as an iconoclast. Avram, it would have been a lot easier for him to get along, to go along, but he couldn't have it any other way. He was a person of MS. Talk about that a little bit more. And as we all know, he suffered for it, as people of principle always do in life. And he made a commitment to pass this on to Yitzchak, from Yitzchak to Yaakov, and Yaakov to all of his sons. And the Rambam writes, until there was an Uma Achas Sheyodas Es Hashem, there was an entire nation of people who were living up to varying degrees, but who were living up, broadly speaking, to the legacy of Avraham Avinu, in Uma Yodas Es Hashem. A nation, not just one individual, but that Avram had been the progenitor of an entire nation of people who were able to repudiate Avodah Zarah, which was otherwise ubiquitous and pervasive in that society. Tragically, however, what Shibud Mitzrayim, what the iron cauldron of slavery in Egypt did to us, was to denigrate and desiccate our spiritual essence until, as the Rambam describes, kimat kat ne'ekar mashashasal Avram Avinu, that which Avram had implanted in his descendants and by extension in the world, was almost ne'ekar, completely and totally uprooted. And God sent Moshe Rabbeinu to extract the Jewish people at the 11th hour before, you know, cataclysm could strike. This presentation of Yetzias Mitzrayim is itself astonishing. Yetzias Mitzrayim was meant not to so much create anew, but Yetzias Mitzrayim was meant to preserve, was to preserve the contribution of Avraham Avinu to his family and to the world. The idea of a creator, fealty to that creator, the ability to reject Avodah Zarah, as Avraham personally had in Ur Kasdim, and as the Jews would, as we'll describe, Mekcho mi ba'asor, at a critical juncture, emerging from Yetzias Mitzrayim. We noted before that the Torah uses the language of kicha, v'ikhulahem ish selavei savos selavayas, and subsequently a preliminary term, or what appears to be a preliminary term, of mishchu ukichu. It's that formulation of mishchu that I'd like to try to understand. The Midrash Halacha, in particular the Mechilta, advances the notion that, generally speaking, v'hinei teich es dodim, as we know, the time for redemption had come, but the Jewish people, v'at erom v'eryah, the psukim in Yecheskel, so beautiful, the Jewish people were arum min hamitzvos, that geula couldn't really be achieved absent some zechuyos, some merits. There's certain foundations upon which God would act and extract his people. V'damai chayi, v'damai chayi, dam Pesach, v'dam Mila. However, none of that explains, that certainly explains Shechitas Karban Pesach, and that explains the implicit halacha of Mila, kol arel lo yochal bo, because an Arel, somebody who's uncircumcised, cannot participate in the Korban Pesach. But none of that really explains this process of 96 hours. Here, the Mechilta, which is elaborated by the Psikta and quoted by the Tur in Shulchan Aruch, Aruch Chaim Taf Lamed, describes a process that we alluded to in brief before, where the Jews, in fulfillment of this mandate, took the seh and tied it to a piece of furniture in their homes. Egyptians then entered, asked them what in the world was going on. This is the seh. Right? Earlier in the process of Yitzias Mitzrayim, Moshe Rabbeinu had said, if we attempt to slaughter the sheep here in Egypt, don't you think it will lead to a mass lynching, a pogrom? And he wasn't wrong. And what happened was is that the Jewish people, were the beneficiaries of what the Torah refers to, based on the Midrashim, as a nes gadol, a remarkable miracle that the Egyptians were somehow dumbstruck, awestruck, unable to respond in the moment, and we were able to proceed with the process that would continue after this initial confrontation, 96 hours with Shechitas Korban Pesach, and then the next day with Yitzias Mitzrayim, 7 days later with Kriyas Yamsov, 7 weeks after that at Maimed Har Sinai. But again, none of this explains why you would need precisely 4 days, and none of this addresses that preliminary term of Mishch. The Shmos Rabbah addresses this, the latter of the two questions. Mishchu kichulachem, kilomar, mishchu yideichem me'avodas kochavim. Mishchu isn't merely a preliminary term, but mishchu is a substantive contribution. The first step, as it were, on the path to redemption is not a step forward, but actually a step backwards. And sometimes that's necessary, as we know, to take 2 steps forward. Mishchu, to withdraw. Mishichas yadayim. Mishchu yideichem me'avodah zarah. The Bach elaborates, I admit it's a very stark passage in Halacha to read, but it has to be said. Rubam shel Yisrael avdu avodas gilulim. The vast majority of the Jewish people in that generation were idolaters. The vast majority. In the Rambam's own telling, as we said, kimat ne'ekar hakat sheshasal Avraham Avinu, the Rambam says all of the Jewish people, with the exception of Shevet Levi, were totally ensconced, immersed in Avodah Zarah. The Bach continues, uchedivrei chazal, mishchu yideichem me'avodah zarah ukchulachem tzon shel mitzvah. The first step was literally a step backwards, to withdraw from a world of avodah zarah. Ve'al karchach, says the Bach, and therefore hayu shineim chaos. That's why the Egyptians were so incensed and so outraged. It wasn't just that the Jews were now declaring their emancipation, their sense of freedom, their willingness to defy their erstwhile masters, but the Egyptians were truly in a state of shock. These Jews, these Hebrews, had worshipped Avodah Zarah alongside them for generations, far longer than anyone could remember. That was the essence of the shock, that the Jews could extract themselves, mishchu yideichem me'avodah zarah. The Gemara in Chulin on Daf Hei assumes that this is paradigmatic. Taking a step back from Avodah Zarah is actually the most important step of all. Amar Mar Chamura Avodas Kochavim Shekol HaKofer Ba Moda B'chol HaTorah Kula. A person who renounces, repudiates, rejects Avodah Zarah has in turn affirmed the entirety of the Torah. We're not talking about a person who learns Daf Yomi or who is punctilious or even observes other mitzvos, Chazal understood that the very process of simply withdrawing from Avodah Zarah, of separating oneself from the pagan, pervasive pagan world, is itself the critical first step, the Rubicon, Kimodeh b'chol ha-Torah kula. It makes all subsequent spiritual life possible. The Rambam in Hilchos Avodah Zarah in Perek Beis writes extensively about this idea. A brief selection. Mitzvot avodos kochavim keneged hamitzvos kulan hi. It's the equivalent of all other mitzvos in the Torah. Kol amodeh b'avodas kochavim kofer b'chol ha-Torah kula b'chol ha-Naviyim b'chol ma'ashen itztavu ha-Naviyim mi'adam v'atzof ha-Olam. B'chol ha-kofer b'avodah zarah, modeh b'chol ha-Torah kula u'b'chol ha-Naviyim u'b'chol ma'ashen itztavu ha-Naviyim mi'adam v'atzof ha-Olam. The point is that the first step isn't what should I do, but the first step is rather what shouldn't I do. That was the mishchu, yideichem mi'avodah zarah, that preceded the kicha, that enabled everything else that followed. Before we address some of the questions that we raised at the outset of the shiur, I'd like to take a moment to elaborate on this theme in a broader sense. Very often when it comes to admirable spiritual goals that we have, each of us, presumably, in different ways, in different areas, we think to ourselves about various things that we might wish to do, whether it's attainments, Libra Torah, Shmiras HaMitzvos, and the like. We think about things to take on. But this paradigm might give us a little bit of a different roadmap. Perhaps the first step, Mekcho Miba'asor, is one defined by Mishchu Ukichu. The first step isn't so much a step forward, but a step backwards. Sefer Tehillim begins precisely on this theme. The classical work in all of Tanakh, presumably in all of our canon, regarding spirituality and Dveikus Bashem, the highest spiritual values to which we earn, begins precisely with this note. Ashrei ho'ish asher lo halach ba'atzas rishayim uvederech chata'im lo amad uvemoshav leitzim lo yashav. Person should be praised for the company that they don't keep, for the scenes that they wisely, prudently avoid, from the cynics, the Moshav Leitzim, with whom they are not counted. And that makes possible great attainment. Ki misaras Hashem chatzo, misarasa yega yomam valaywa. From there, one can aspire indeed to very great attainments. But it doesn't begin with a step forward, as noted, mishchu ukichu. It first requires a withdrawal from the havale hasman in every generation. It didn't end in Egypt. It didn't begin there either, or Kastim, Mitzrayim, America of the 21st century. There's always an ambient culture which at some level we hope to elevate. We take very seriously the mandate of making material contributions to Yeshuvo Sha'olam, but we also acknowledge and recognize that there's much which is irreconcilable. And taking a step back from all of that is the beginning of all spiritual life. As the Rambam wrote in Hilchos Tshuva about Avas Hashem, in Avas Hashem diksheres velibo shel Adam ad sheyazov, it requires a step backwards. I think that's a very significant part of Mishchul, of what made this moment of Kicha Mibe'asor so significant. But as we said before, none of that answers why it bidavka happened on Shabbos. None of that answers why you would need, I understand it was important to make the point to the Egyptians, but could the point not have been made in 24 hours, 48 hours, 72 hours, or for that matter, why not a week, 168 hours? What was the nature of these 4 days? I think the answer is obvious, and it's literally one word, Shabbos. Contra the implication of the Beis Yosef, where he says, well, you're right, all the yamim between Yud and Yudalid were Gedolim. It just happened to be that we focus on the beginning. It seems to me that it couldn't have been on any other day. For as we know, if Avodah Zarah is Shkula Keneged Kol HaTorah Kula, Avodah Zarah, as we said, is sui generis, it stands out from all of the other mitzvos in the Torah in terms of being their equivalent. Amumar le'Avodah Zarah is Amumar le'Kol HaTorah Kula. The only other mitzvah that keeps that same company is, of course, Shabbos. The Rambam wrote in his Pereshin to Hilchol Shabbos, Perek Lamed, HaShabbos ve'Avodah Zarah kol achas mishtein shkula keneged shar kol ha-mitzvah satara. Shabbos and Avodah Zarah are alone in this category. HaShabbos hi ha-os shebein HaKadosh Baruch Hu ve'inenu le'olam. Lefikach kol ha-over lo shar ha-mitzvah sarehu b'chal rishay Yisrael. Aval mechal ha-Shabbos b'farhesi ha-rei ke'ovei avodas kochavim mazalos u'shneyem ke'ovdei kochavim mazalos l'chol divrei. A breach of Shabbos is equated with the rejection of HaKadosh Baruch Hu entirely. As the Ramban develops in his celebrated passage, the second set of the Aseres Hadibros, Shabbos Zecher L'Tzias Mitzrayim, Yitzias Mitzrayim Zecher L'Shabbos, Shabbos is the day when we acknowledge God's creation of the world and repudiate any counter-ideologies. And Yitzias Mitzrayim proves that God didn't merely create the world, but he continues to dominate and reign supreme over that world. If he could overturn creation, that itself is a validation of his role as the ultimate creator. What I'm suggesting is that it was far from arbitrary that the Jewish people took this step of Mishchu Yideichem Me'Avodah Zarah. Far from arbitrary that this occurred on Shabbos. It had to be so. In fact, what I would suggest is that it really didn't matter whether it was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 days before the Jews were going to leave. I don't think that there's any real significance intrinsically to the fact that it happened to be 4 days before. God had determined that the Jews were going out on Tesvav, that Shechitas Karban Pesach was on Yudalid, and that the Shabbos before happened to be 4 days. The Shabbos before was going to be the moment when they crossed their own Rubicon. If there's no intrinsic significance that we found to 96 hours, I don't consider that to be a false negative. I consider that to be itself evidence that it really didn't matter. The point was that on Shabbos, of course, even before we began to formally observe Shabbos, that day became synonymous with testifying to, affirming divine sovereignty over the universe, and of course, repudiation of Avodah Zarah. This point is made explicitly by the Aruch HaShulchan. The Aruch HaShulchan writes, here you have it in Or HaChaim in Siman Taf Lamed. Sorry about that, I think I froze for a second. Okay. Can everybody hear me? So the Aruch HaShulchan writes, apologize, in Aruch Chaim, in Siman Taf Lamed, going well beyond the Tur and the Beis Yosef. With your permission, I'd like to read it. I find the language to be particularly beautiful. Ho'emes, to Shabbos Taloi B'Pesach U'Pesach B'Shabbos, channeling the Ramban, Shabbos Hu Osal Chiddush HaOlam, Shabbos reflects the creation of the world. U'Pesach Hu Os Al Hashgacha, on God's ongoing providence, and indeed, V'Chibas Yisrael, his election predicated on love for the Jewish people. V'zeb is lozeh, lav klum. V'lachain, the Aruch HaShulchan goes further, techef b'yitzias Mitzrayim, that's why, right after Yitzias Mitzrayim, nasana kadosh baruch hu lanu es ha-shabbos, v'lohimtin ad matan Torah. We got Shabbos right away, as we know at Mara. This is, of course, immortalized in the Dayenu. People sometimes make short shrift of it. There's a kind of a poem that didn't appear in the Rambam's Haggadah, but that's what we say. Ilu nasan lanu es ha-shabbos velo kirvanu lifnei har Sinai. It came before. Shabbos preceded all of that. Lefikach Shabbos zeh nikre ha-gadol. This Shabbos was Shabbos ha-gadol shebo nizgadol kadosh baruch hu shelevad chiddush ha-olam nizbara hashgachaso yizbarach. It's Shabbos ha-gadol because we elevated God specifically through renunciation of Avodah Zarah. Mishchu yedeicha me'avodah zarah. V'gam anachnu nisgadalnu. Shabbos ha-gadol because we ourselves were exalted. Shebachar banu mikolam v'lachein be'emes korin oso ha-gadol. It had to be Shabbos. Shabbos, which from time immemorial v'yivarech lokim es yom ha-shvi v'yikadesh oso, always reflected divine mastery. It had to be that we would begin that process of being Miromim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, elevating him on Shabbos, and that we too, in turn, would be elevated. Shabbos, after all, as Aruch HaShulchan says, reflects Bechiras Yisrael, our election, Nachri Sheshavas Chayiv Misa, Gam B'Mnuchaso, Lo Yishkenu Arelim. It's a singular sign, as the Rambam wrote, as we quoted before, Osi Bein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Uveinenu. It reflects the special standing of the Jewish people. And that is exactly, as we know, what so incensed and infuriated the Egyptians, and Ad HaYom HaZeh continues to incense and infuriate our enemies, the sense that there is an unbreakable bond, indeed a special relationship between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and his people. I mentioned before, and I stick to it, it was only a few minutes ago, that when it comes to our personal spiritual goals, I very much believe, like it says in Tehillim, like we have this model of Mishchu, that the first step is almost always a step back, an ability to extract ourselves from something toxic, negative, distracting, before we're able to take two steps forward and focus on tangible spiritual gain. And I hope that we're all able to apply that lesson, this Shabbos HaGadol, in ways that are personal to us, whether it's our connection to Torah, Tefillah, Chesed. I think it applies across the board. But at a communal level, I wanted specifically this year, given the format, this being the very anniversary of that originally Shabbos HaGadol, at the communal level, I wanted to take a few moments with your permission to reflect on Shabbos. Shabbos, every single week, by its very nature, provides us with a singular opportunity to take a step back from all of our regular patterns, technology, work, necessary obligations, some of greater importance, some of lesser importance, some of no importance, to disconnect, quite literally, from all of those burdens, and to immerse ourselves in a 25-hour period of sanctity where we can focus on the things that matter most, tefillah, Limud HaTorah, family relationships, personal relationships, and the like. The Sforno, in a sublime comment, Parshas B'Shalach, notes that as the Jews were being introduced to the halachos of Shabbos, Moshe uses really astonishing formulation with the Jewish people. Re'u ki Hashem nasan lachem ha-Shabbos. That God has given you Shabbos. And the Sforno delineates between what we might call two dinim, two dimensions, mitzvahs, Shabbos, and matanas Shabbos, the gift of Shabbos. The Sforno is not somebody who anybody could accuse of being narrow in his outlook. He is the only early Achron that I'm aware of who translated his own works by himself into Latin. He was respected by all of the leading scholars of Italy as a person who was a sovereign master of not only Judaic texts, but worldly wisdom. And yet he writes that Shabbos should be reserved for Dvarim Shebikdusha, matters of sanctity. He was a person who had great appreciation for all of the Chachmas HaOlam. He really did. And yet he saw Shabbos for what it was. Re'u ki Hashem nasan lachem ha-Shabbos. An opportunity to take a step back from all of our even important engagement with the world and to focus on immersion in a sublime world of sanctity, of davening, of Torah, of Dvarim Shebikdusha, of family relationships. Very often, I'm asked the question in different iterations, but the question always takes on the same form, more or less. May I do X, Y, or Z on Shabbos? And they always try to answer it in exactly the same way. These are the issues that are involved. This might be prohibited by the Torah, this might be purely Nesedur Abanan, a matter of rabbinic law. Under these circumstances, these authorities would permit it, under these circumstances, others. And then I say, but there's another question that we have to ask now. The only question is not, may I do this on Shabbos? But should I do this on Shabbos? Is this the best use of the spiritual opportunity that Shabbos represents? The Jewish people crawling out from under the Egyptian spiritual yoke, reconnecting with the legacy of Avraham Avinu, had to take place on Shabbos. It couldn't have been otherwise. And we always have to ask ourselves, even if it were the case, and it's not always the case, certainly not always the case, that something is even technically permissible, but even if it were, would it be the best use of Shabbos? Would it reflect the idea of mishchu, of withdrawing from the world that demands our time and energy? Or sometimes we think it demands our time and energy, our phones and everything that comes. Is this the best way for us to use this time? Or Shabbos perhaps better used, what the Sforno called, Matanas Shabbos, the gift of staying in shul a little bit longer, not having to worry about, I'm going to turn into a pumpkin if the Chazan takes another minute for Psuke de Zimra. Miss my bus, etc. To immerse oneself in what that has to offer. All too often, people are asking the wrong question, or at least not asking the necessary additional question of, should I do this on Shabbos? And the reason that I make this petition in a public way is that this is really where it does take a village. Shabbos is observed as a community. Our ability to create an environment, especially for our children, of recognizing the gift of Shabbos, that requires a collective effort. It's very difficult, as we all know, when certain, whether it's dress, it's construction, certain things, which may indeed, like I said, not only be a question of the spirit, but the letter of the law, become accepted, becomes very, very, very difficult to generate an atmosphere that gives a real sense of Kedusha Shabbos. It's something where everybody kind of doing their own thing, by definition, will undermine our efforts at the communal level. It's not true in every mitzvah. I think it's very much the case when it comes to Shabbos. And so I think it's worth, again, for all of us, taking the message of Mishchu and applying it in our personal lives, Ba'asher Anachnu Sham, whatever is on our minds, whether it's Torah, Tefillah, Chesed, that sometimes you have to take a step back before taking a step forward. But collectively, this year, for Shabbos HaGadol, I think it's worth us taking a moment to think about the opportunity that Shabbos presents us with every single week. The immersive experience of Shabbos gives us a chance to focus, like I say, on the things that matter most. There's an intangible, ineffable quality to Shabbos that together as a community, we have the capacity to create. An attitude of going up to the very outer boundary of the law with no regard for its spirit probably violates the letter of the law in many cases, but certainly will not be conducive to our attempts to try to inculcate, he said, especially within the next generation, a sense of an appreciation for the true matana that Shabbos represents. And so, to conclude with those words of the Aruch HaShulchan, that were those original Shabbos, before the Jewish people started to observe the letter of the law of Shabbos, they captured the spirit of Shabbos. Mishchu yedeicha me'avodah zarah. They told the Egyptians that they were withdrawing. They handed in their resignation papers for avodah zarah. They were no longer going to be a part of that. They were separate and distinct. Later on, of course, but before Har Sinai, notably, they would get the laws of Shabbos. But it's incumbent upon us never to forget that original spirit. And Shabbos is a time for bonding with Hashem, for taking a step back from all that draws our attention in this world, from the days of Mitzrayim to this very day. I promise you, nothing has changed in that regard. People may not worship a sheep anymore, but there's plenty that they worship which isn't God. To take a step back from all of that and take full advantage of the opportunity that Shabbos presents us with every single week. So I want to wish everybody Chag Kasher V'Sameach. Should be a wonderful Yantif. And this year, may our Shabbos HaGadol, on the anniversary of the original Shabbos HaGadol, enable us to, at the communal level, more fully appreciate and maximize the matana, the true gift, which is Shabbos. Chag Kasher v'sameach.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you, Yitzchak.
Thank you.